Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out.
Hi. With a lot more swearing this time.
No.
And given the green light, we're going for it.
Hell no. I would have it. There we go. Now, actually, just want to say relatively quickly, since let's not talk courthouse, let's not talk overlay anymore. Right? But the thing is that, you know, again, as a resident of a relatively small mixed use business A1 district, mm-hmm. that's what I live, you know, which is I like it to be sort of modest scale.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, when all this big talks of, you know, about either on the overlay stuff or Giganto, this, that, and the other thing, you know, there's actually just a lot of just sort of revisitation of the city generally, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's in the individual squares, some of the other business districts, mm-hmm. either in East Cambridge or elsewhere or whatever. So I know you seem to get called upon these days. You have now a pretty good success record for zoning legislation.
Yep.
In the city, and so you're sort of a go-to guy now.
Sometimes I get called from different groups and whatnot to do different things. Oftentimes I say no, leave me alone. But I think I've identified, at least with some other people, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit things. Zoning-wise, in the city, that if you fix this issue, you fix that issue, it opens the door to a lot more development in the development that we say that we want, as right. opposed to going for what is called a planned unit development, where we just rezone a block, kind of like we did for Market Central, aka Mass and Main. Mass and Main is such a better name.
Sorry. It is such a better
name. Just rolls off the tongue.
I'm going to keep calling it that. Just like we always, when they changed the Fleet, was it the Fleet Center?
Yeah.
Everybody still called it the Boston Garden.
Well, it's like the Tweeter Center. It's Great Woods. I mean, Sorry.
Yeah.
A little bit of a segue there. But, so for instance, like in Harvard Square. Harvard Square is a real tough nut to crack because their zoning map is just a gigantic mess. I think, the opportunity to build housing there without adding height, there is no opportunity to do that. So, like, if you can't add height to Harvard Square, you can't build housing.
But you know, Harvard Square is like a lot of Central Square too have these sort of little missing teeth. There are places where they are artificially low but surrounded by larger, where you could actually put height in and it wouldn't really hurt.
So I think you could put density in there. I think the one good thing about the affordable overlay, I know we're going to talk about, is this idea that we can sort of separate FAR from height. Right? They're two different things, and they need to be looked at as two different things. So there are ways to add infill development to Harvard Square, not a lot of it, but stuff that will add to the vibrancy, add some more people, put some more bodies in the street, and help all those local businesses that people say that they love, but secretly never go to, and give them some support. In places like Central Square, I have always been of the mind that height here is an absolute must. Come on. You know, so if you want to build, if you think that a single-story building next to a T-stop is something we should celebrate, I have nothing for you.
I agree with
that. So, but at the same time, with the zoning changes that we have done in Central Square, it's enough for an existing two-story, three-story building, like my property where I'm currently building a hotel. I'm not building residential because I can't go up. If I could go up, you get residential because... we don't have time for economics 101, but there's a reason for it. It's not just that I'm evil, but I am also evil.
I completely agree.
Thank you. Just like in this Webster Street into Union Square area.
Soon to be a Green Line hub.
Soon to be a Green Line hub. You have developers there who are building 35-foot tall residential structures that look like ski lodges, which makes absolutely no sense. It's a total mixed opportunity. And missed opportunity, and you really ought to be thinking about height in that area. And there's precedent for it, but the only obstacle really to all of this stuff is someone needs to go and write it, push it forward into the council, and start talking about it. I think you're going to see a lot of that coming from me real soon.
Well, and I have to say that's a lot better than what the alternative sometimes is, which is to do nothing and then wait for a big property owner, you know, right. with a lot of pension funds aggregated to come in, and then they're the ones who they then propose the zoning change because you failed to do it.
In Central Square, we spent 15 million years, you know, study. If the Fennell family didn't sell their property, we would have nothing.
Exactly.
We would have absolutely nothing.
That's right.
I think the problem is we always go for this, like, Hail Mary, long bomb, got to get it in the end zone every single time, style of zoning reform. And I don't know why, like, the definition of bumping into the same thing over and over again without, you know, changing course, but, like, why not just do it incrementally? Everyone seems to be very comfortable with incremental. That's where I've had the most success, because I can explain it to people in terms that is not like I don't speak planner. And oftentimes when you go and you talk to someone who is a planner, they speak in this vernacular that either one, they feel like you're being insulted by them, or two, that just like you're just way over the top. You're like, no idea what you're talking about. And it seems as if, and a lot of times, that before you are asked the question, or you ask the question, that these people actually know what the answer is, and they're trying to guide you to a particular outcome. I like to do it from the exact opposite way, where we just kind of discover that outcome together, where I present an idea, and you guys push and tuck and make it a thing.
Now, let me just dive into this one little bit about, you know, having served on that Envision process, not my favorite thing I've done in Cambridge.
I told you so.
I know it. You were right. You're absolutely right. But the thing is that, and this is somewhat reminiscent of something Dennis Carlone occasionally says, which is, if you want housing, you have to zone for housing. If you want retail, you have to zone for retail.
My God, I don't want to agree with Dennis.
Right. But you know, here's the thing I'm going to say, and this is where I'm going to actually try and do a little visioning.
Do it.
You know, from a la Envision, right? Which is this, is that, you know, everybody talks about how retail's dying, and I think in many respects it is. You know, everybody's like doing online shopping or whatever. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, everybody's also talking about mobility changes and how everybody's going to be going around on hoverboards and scooters and whatever, and nobody's going to be shopping out at the malls. Malls have died, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is that there's a part of me actually thinks that, though we can't quite envision what it's going to shape out like, there will be a future where, you know, retail centers and just places where people go to hang out and buy stuff and be, it's kind of...
I want to push back a little bit on the death of retail, because I think it was premature.
I agree too.
And I think the death of malls is also premature.
Right.
I think malls themselves are being redeveloped and turned. Either they're adding residential to them,
or
they're adding office spaces to them, and it makes all the sense in the world. And the best part about malls is the infrastructure is at a high commercial rate, and they've got the infrastructure to handle all the residential stuff. So the bones of these malls are almost ideal for development, because they've done... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just like a plug-and-play situation where, like, the Galleria, I think, is a good example of, you know, a great idea a million years ago, but now needs to be reinvented. And at the time, the Galleria...
There's a petition to reinvent the Cambridge Side Galleria that was... It expired, but now, just recently, it was a modified version.
And I'm actually very keen on that. They absolutely should be doing that.
Right, and I don't know... I'm not going to comment on the specifics of that petition. I don't know. I haven't read it, really. But the thing is that a reinvention is due there.
Yeah. Adding housing, adding some office, adding some more energy to the space. You know, I put my tenant Toscanini is there on First and Rogers. You should go visit him.
I've been there,
and it's, you can see the activity there is starting to bustle up. It's a different kind of activity than you see in Central Square, where it's more of like the daytime afternoon activity, where Central Square really kind of turns on at night. But it's growing, and the businesses there need more critical mass.
And when North Point, now known as Cambridge Crossing, actually happens, when they move the Green Line across over to the other side of the McGrath-O'Brien Highway...
Same naming committee, maybe. Like, I saw North Point to me, it still sounds better.
But the thing is when they reinvent that whole area, and where the Leechmere Station is now, will become something hopefully really great. Mm-hmm. You know, if we could just... do the visioning thing, you know, and understand, you know, the courthouse area, the First Street parking garage, reinvention of the Galleria Mall area, complete reinvention of the Leechmere area, right? And making a connection when McGrath Highway becomes McGrath Boulevard. Actually, it was once called Bridge Street. We should rename it Bridge Street. How about that? Right. Oh, no, we can keep McGrath, the McGrath Boulevard or something like that. But the thing is that, you know, a reinvention of that area, really, it could be a great thing. And, you know, I don't know that the council should be involved in that too much, because I don't know that they've got the vision thing down.
I think the council...
But they ought to at least get out of the way.
Who I give I just give them such a hard time. And oftentimes sometimes I'm wrong to do so. These people are, while they are paid, they're not zoning experts, they're not developers. I think they listen to their constituents. In a lot of ways, they are given and fall into this trap of misinformation and not, and maybe falling victim to the fact that there is no vision, that they rely on the CDD or some other group to say, you know, here's the vision, let's go forth. And there really are, there's no meat to those bones. Why the envision process, why I totally didn't want anything to do with it, is, you know, I felt from the very beginning when they showed Alewife, right, at the very first presentation, no mention of any other part of the city. So how is that a master plan to begin with? But
well, that was a very political aspect.
Well, right, because the master plan was
gone
from a political controversy.
Absolutely right.
Two councillors fighting, saying, we can't redevelop Central Square because, you know, at the end of days, dogs and cats start getting married. And now we have to have a master plan to sort of explain to us why, if I build 1,000 units of housing in Central Square, you know, East Cambridge won't just collapse. And there was a little bit of nonsense there. And I think something begot of nonsense becomes nonsense. So I think with the envision process, and I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat in this at all, but I'm saying I think they actually knew the answer to the question. They just wanted to put a bunch of people on the boat to add ballast to it, to give whatever recommendations they came up with some weight. To say that, like, you know, well, Robert Winters was on this committee and he says affordable housing is fantastic, right? And that's, you know, when C2 was done, it was the same thing. Yeah, we actually, all of us wrote a letter and we added it to the process saying, you know, these guys have some ideas, we had our own, this is what we actually agreed to.
By the way, I think affordability in housing is great and is essential. I just think that the way they are going about it is dead wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
Completely dead wrong. I mean, you know, and when you can have a housing working group who not one time talked about housing generally, but only talked about subsidized housing, I think you already kind of missed the boat.
I mean, there's, and again, I've often said to people that I feel like sort of Jane Goodall amongst liberals, sort of watching what you guys do. And there's this behavior pattern that I've noticed where when a topic becomes uncomfortable, you guys tend to not want to address it directly. And with affordable housing, there seems to be this notion that we can't, I don't think I've ever heard a councillor say market rate housing in the Sullivan Chamber.
They say luxury housing.
They say luxury housing, yeah. Which is, you know, you can see it across the street here. It says luxury housing.
I know. Because that's a marketing ploy. That's
because I think if they wrote, you know, okay, kind of crap housing, but it's really expensive, you wouldn't want to, it would sound less appealing.
Right.
But the focus is not on the actual outcome. You're looking at it in terms of, well, I don't want this kind of developer to make any money. These kind of developers are really good because they work for a nonprofit, and nonprofit means no one makes money. So,
as my friend Glenn Kutcher always said, the originator of the original Cambridge Inside Out, it's all about control.
Yeah, it's true.
Always about
it's true.
Control.
But the narrative is a little too uncomfortable. I mean, like when we talk about Central Square and the social issues in Central Square, everyone sort of like runs for a desk to hide underneath. And I'm kind of looking around, going, well, how can we not? How can we plan for Central Square not talk about this?
Right.
You know, in the same way when we talk about the divide in education in Cambridge. And you know, I remember saying to a few counselors, like, you know, you got to start look at the kindergarten and preschool level. Like, they're running on dual track, so there's always going to be a gap, because if you're breaking these kids up in certain ways that you say you don't want to, but jar, you should probably stop doing that.
Right.
But again, maybe we should get a committee, or we should put a blue ribbon on it or a red ribbon.
So let's a little pivot now. So talk a little bit about the election, okay? Now, again, I don't want to obsess about or single out individuals so much here. But the thing is, there's going to be a school committee election as well as city council election. There's three, and you elect six people to the school committee. Did I hold up the right number of fingers? There we go. All right. And there are three people who are not running, so they're actually... as I pointed out to Judy, I said we have six vacancies, but there are three incumbents who would like to take those seats back as well. So there's going to be some new faces. The big question to me is not are we going to see new faces? We may see three or four new faces on the school committee. The question is, are the individuals going to be behaving and acting differently, stepping it up a little bit?
That's my biggest problem with it in every
not
election.
Not just infighting.
They all just seem the same. Like, every counselor kind of says the same thing.
Candidate says the same thing. Yeah. It's one of the most infuriating things. I mean, I'm putting together candidate pages, and then, you know, and like, please, folks, people send me materials, and I love it when they do it. I post them up on the candidate pages. And then as I read through it, I go like, my God, this is so generic. You just said exactly the same thing that every other candidate has said since the beginning of time.
And it's pretty clear to me that, I think Mike Connolly has a few guys who are running on his sort of narrative.
We're getting into this era of kingmakers again.
Yeah, it always kind of annoys me that these guys don't have like their own platform, their own agenda. Right. They sort of like, they pick, Michael or somebody else tells them what to do.
So the Connolly crowd, basically, and it's not just Connolly, whole little Our Revolution little cult there. And, and they're promoting these sort of little Sanders acolyte type of candidates, so you can kind of more or less know where they're coming from. Yep. I don't think we need to name out who all of them are right here.
You know who you are.
Right, but we have at least two, maybe three candidates who are pretty much cut from that cloth, who are the 22 running for city council. I would just find it interesting that the revolutionaries, as well as the A Better Cambridge group or the Residence Alliance, none of them care about the school committee. None.
No.
They don't care at all.
Well, they don't.
Right? But don't you know the children are our future?
It goes back to affordable housing. And, like, I actually love this conversation about zoning and development. But what they seem to do is that they look at these problems in a vacuum and they say, okay, affordable housing is our only problem. But they don't really consider how we house people, where they live, what services are available, what's the school going to be like.
Or if you have a kid who grows up in affordable housing, whatever. What's his future going to be, right? I mean, did the school system actually get him prepared so they actually can walk right into some of the jobs that are in Kendall Square?
Third rail conversation.
Or have you basically educated to the point where his entire life is going to be unaffordable?
Well, there's my problem as far as like just understanding the ideology behind it, because affordable housing, in my opinion, I thought was made an emergency, to help people get on their feet. To make it more equitable.
Ideally.
And that the idea was that you would not be living in affordable housing forever, that you'd eventually would buy a home.
Unless you're an elderly person, in which case, this is what we do for this, to help this, our elderly friends.
That, what I just said there, was probably the most controversial thing ever said in Cambridge, ever, in terms of the, you talk to counselors about this, or council hopefuls, they get a little squeamish about it. You don't really... Which makes it hard for me to either support anybody, because I don't understand what the goal is. If the goal is everyone should have a house, we should house absolutely everybody, then we're going about it the wrong way, because we need to build. I mean, how many people are on the planet? A couple billion. We need a lot of
actually. The best way to do that is annexation.
But just take all of our property. I mean, there's some of the socialist candidates. Like, I know for a fact, if it was a possibility to take my house,
they would do it.
Kick me out of it. They would absolutely do it in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, so we do have that little contingent.
Yeah.
But, it's like, I don't know how this whole thing is going to shape up. But, as I say, and certainly of the 22 candidates who are running for city council, not all of them are going to be getting the blessings of the various little political action groups now.
Well, right now it seems divided between affordable housing overlay or no affordable housing overlay. That seems to be maybe one distinguishing point.
Yeah, but that's going to be really interesting, because, I think I talked about this last week, is that So some years ago, this Cambridge Residence Alliance came into existence. Mm-hmm. I think, they always yell at me when I say this, but it grew as out of like this Essex Street neighbors group, right?
It's like Life of Brian, the People's Popular Front.
And then they pushed this petition to downzone, if you can believe that, downzone Central Square.
Mm-hmm. The Yana petition.
Yeah, the Yana petition. And I was, sort of like... I often refer to it as they wanted to downzone Central Square to farmland, right?
It was a parking lot. It was basically the parking lot petition.
Yeah, the permanent parking petition, right? And so, for all the best of reasons, the ABC group, which didn't even have a name at the time, but honestly, they were just the We Don't Like the Residence Alliance crowd, came into existence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of transit-oriented development people amongst them, right? Yeah. But the thing is now with this overlay business behind them, it's like I actually have a very difficult time. I think there's going to be an interesting dilemma. To whatever degree these power brokers, because that's what they are, they want to form slates and then elect their guys and say, you're our guys, you owe us, you gotta do what we want now. That's not going to be such an easy thing. I mean, what defines the Residence Alliance now? They would kind of keep the density low.
Right.
But the thing is, but they're now gung-ho for at least...
I think some of them are gung-ho. I mean, I see...
I think they may be splitting.
I think there's some divide amongst what their opinion is. Like, I remember when the affordable overlay was first explain to people there were other schemes involved. There was something called the super inclusionary scheme and something called the environmental scheme, which added density bonuses for doing certain things. Right. But
And I will say that on the Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee, the other two proposals were actually reasonably well received. The overlay was the one that was not well received.
The super inclusionary, and in my opinion, is probably the best out of all of them because it builds off an existing program that we know that works. And it creates density bonuses for the type of development that we want to see, especially in, again, go back to Central Square or Kendall Square or the places where there are soft sites, which I think is the biggest missing component of the affordable overlay discussion, is that where are the actual soft sites in the city for development? They're not in West Cambridge,
in case
you were wondering. Yeah. As much as we'd love to watch them squirm and say, oh my God, those people are coming to live with me. And I did say those people because I don't even know what New Englanders think about affordable housing, but you guys are a little bit tight in the pants about that.
I have to say, Dennis Carlone, when this thing was first coming before them, he said it's all about the soft sites.
God damn it, I'm agreeing with him again?
I know.
Oh, this is terrible. I'm getting old.
So if you think, if you're Tim Toomey and you think, oh, we're going to stick it to the folks in West Cambridge. No, you're not, Timmy. You're going to be sticking it to the folks at East Cambridge. Hate to break it to you.
Yeah, but so why not look at the, we're going back to zoning again. I'm sorry. It's the nature of the beast. But look at the places where we can already do it. If you have a top-down mentality, you can see how this place should be built. And it's incremental. And over time, in over 100 years, West Cambridge will be developed more, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. And to think that it will, but the flick of the light switch is crazy. But back to the candidates.
Back to the candidates, indeed. So I don't know how, at some point, because if you've got money, right, mm-hmm. and these groups are now all raising money because they want to actually be able to basically sell a slate of candidates.
You donate to counselors?
I haven't. You have done it in the past. I have noticed that you have not this time.
I have. I have this so far, one counselor and an incumbent. I really like Counselor Mallon. I think that she's been great for Central Square. And I think there's actually two other counselors who really been good for Central Square, is Mark McGovern and Denise Simmons. But I've always been, even when I'm in Harvard Square and they're asking me to help them in Harvard Square, I always say, I don't care about Harvard Square. I'm Central Square through and through. And I'm always going to support counselors who support Central Square. Was that an endorsement?
Sounded like one. I have a different point of view. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. I have my differences with all of them. I'm a conservative, used to be a Republican. Well, I'm obviously going to have political differences with people here.
Well, let me express the point of view that I have about this is that, even though those of us who kind of follow this stuff pretty closely, you can have this sort of mistaken belief that somehow everybody in the city, if 22,000 people or more come out and vote, that somehow 20,000 of those 22,000 people are going to be all well-informed. And in fact, that's exactly the opposite of truth. So what's going to typically happen if you have big citywide mailings of power brokers is they're going to basically send out these broadsides telling people what to think and saying, these are the blessed candidates. And then the other group will say, these are the blessed candidates. And I'm actually getting a little worried that basically we're going to be turning an election based on false propaganda from various interest groups.
One thing that I noticed on your website this year that I never noticed before is the introduction of several PACs. And that to me
is a
growing
concern. It is a real growing concern.
And it's almost like we've decided to go full crazy. Yeah. In terms of trying to mimic national politics. And now we've got, the ABC has an action pack. I really hate that. I just think that's terrible. The Cambridge Residents Alliance, do they have a pack as well?
They actually, in the beginning of this, in July, they actually started one. I think it's called something like Democracy for Cambridge or something like that.
And then there's the Bicyclist Pack. And so I was like, what the heck?
Right. I mean, they raised money just sort of to do some pamphleting or whatever, and I don't know whether they're going to be real players this time around.
I know, but this is small town politics, and I think it's wrong to put these kinds of groups together.
If there was actually real civic organizations that were actually working year round, actually thinking about broadly about the whole city, like youth opportunities, jobs programs, connecting people who are growing up in some of the housing projects to actual jobs, actually really thinking through, making connections like we did a few years ago when we talk about STEM and STEAM and all that jive, about, what is it like for a kid growing up in here, a real comprehensive view, But honestly, when was the last time any of these interest groups ever talked about things like actual infrastructure, well, you know, water, sewer.
Stephen Cohen from the planning board said one of the most coherent things I've ever heard come out of anybody in the planning board and Sullivan Chamber anywhere. He was talking about the affordable overlay, but that's not the context in which I'm taking his quote. In terms of advocates, will always advocate for their issue. And I think you have to rely on, you have to put people in a position of the councilor position or even on the planning board position who understand that they need to adjudicate and balance these opposing interests. It can't be one candidate with blinders on focusing on one issue. And I think amongst the nine, you know, it's been affordable housing, affordable housing, affordable housing. I would love to hear a candidate talk about how we're going to bring equity into our schools, how we're going to create safety in Central Square and in Kendall right. Square and Harvard Square. You know, there are other issues in the city, and they're right. important ones, you know, and they seem to go completely ignored.
It's gone. And honestly, it would help if we actually had a real civic organization or two or three in the city. You know, we have little itsy bitsy things, but in the political context, when you get around municipal election time, we have no civic organizations.
The People's Popular Front of Cambridge Action Pack.
Right. Now, I want you to prove me wrong, really. That's my challenge here to everybody. Prove me wrong. You prove to me that there's an actual civic organization that cares about anything other than one issue in this city, and I'll give you a dollar.
A dollar?
$2. Make it $2. All right?
Ooh, that sounds nice. I like the sound of that.
And and until such time as I'm not going to pay any attention to your recommendations.
Does that mean I can make my own pack right now that does all the things you're asking for and I get my $2?
I'll give you the $2.
Woo! Easy money.
That, right?
Easy money.
You know, but it's a problem, you know, honestly, you know, and if you want to see a little bit of evidence, just look at the fact you have 11 candidates running for school committee. Nobody's going to pay any attention to any of them. You know, they'll do their own personal campaigning and good for them. But, you know, none of these civic organizations or PACs are going to really be paying any attention to them. And in a way, since they don't have anything worth saying, I hope they don't pay attention to them. Well, because it won't be worth it.
If you have kids...
Yeah.
You want to pay attention.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.